Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Suffolk County Legislator, Minority Leader Jason Richburg. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting me to this program today.
Yeah, listen, I know how busy our schedules can be, so carving out some time to have these conversations is very important. And obviously this year, big election year, all county legislators and county executive spots open, and you know, early indications that we have in polling data that we've looked at is people seem very engaged. They're answering questions. They're giving more feedback than we asked for. So it's not the typical off cycle, you know, non-presidential year where people don't want to go to the polls. They don't want to get bothered with politics or whatever. There seems to be engagement, at least in Suffolk County, and interest in the races that are going on. So I think it's important that we, you know, I mean, there's a number of things that we've got to talk about, but I think, you know, that kind of sets the stage for, you know, all of what we're looking at. You know, what leadership is going to look like in Suffolk County and what that means for residents, and you know, obviously from my perspective, what that means for the working life of the people that work directly as employees for the public.
I think it's important, and I think I'm glad to hear, and I've seen something similar, that folks are engaged in asking questions about what government does, the role of government, the role of our county employees,
right,
and more importantly, what can we do better and how can we help them, whether that's water quality, whether it's public safety, whether it's public health. You know, all of those things touch upon the work that your members do. And I think it's important that, you know, folks are engaged in that and understand that our government, whether it's our county elected officials or our county employees, are here to work and serve for them.
Sure. Yeah. And listen, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about those topics. It's something, you know, clearly very important to me and very important to my membership. And the reason I speak about it so much is just to give everyone who's listening a sense of how important these functions actually are. It's like a utility, right? You know, you only notice it's not working when it's not working, right? When it's there, it's just supposed to be there. Hey, listen, I hit the switch, the lights go on, everything's normal. When you hit the switch and the lights don't go on, or everything just turns off,
the oil burner goes out,
right?
Or your sewage treatment plant isn't running. You know, those are the things, you know, or the medical examiner's office is running late, or you know, our internet goes down. Whatever it is, you know when you don't have it. And I think the greatest thing about our county employees, you know, whether it's been COVID or any of the other outbreaks or anything else of natural disasters, our employees have stepped up, whether personally, voluntarily, or and even in their work life. You know, when there's a storm, folks don't realize that those are AME employees who are answering the phones, whether it's in the, you know, call center at the 911 office or in the Fred Center.
Sure.
So those are important roles that we need to make sure that folks understand. Those are your county tax dollars at work.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, going through, you know, the county's had some financial troubles, and getting the county through those financial troubles, that's the workforce, right? That's the public worker that's getting that stuff done. All of the day-to-day craziness that COVID brought, and, you know, different rule changes and everything else, the public employee worked through that, had to change their behavior, you know, sometimes on a daily basis because of changes in regulations and new mandates that were coming out of Albany or from the federal government. But getting everyone through that crisis was the role of the public worker.
And I love to say that government is a battleship. We're not a fighter jet. We don't turn on a dime.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's an emergency, because we're like a battleship, everybody is trained in what to do next, right? And they have an idea of what the next step is. Perfect example is like I was talking about before with the 911 call center.
Sure.
When we lost our internet capability, you know, folks were able to come up with a paper way of communicating using radios to make sure we were able to still provide public safety.
Sure.
When folks up in upstate had that horrible snowstorm, our employees stepped up and took those calls to make sure that they had public safety and were able to communicate to their local law enforcement. So those are just examples of ways that we have stepped up. And like I said, a battleship, we're built to be durable, we're built to get through storms, we're also built to make sure that the folks inside know what to do in case of emergency.
Sure, absolutely. And that's very much You can feel that here in Suffolk County for sure. So I want to talk to you a little bit about your role. You know, like I announced at the beginning, you're the minority leader. So not only are you a legislator for the 15th district, but when we say minority leader, that's the Democratic caucus, because there's a few more on one side of the aisle than the other. That's how we get the majority-minority kind of designation in politics. I always like to make that distinction. But you've been doing that now for a couple of years. And I want to get a sense from you, you know, what that job has been like for you. And you know, again, you were serving on a legislature that was a Democratic majority for a time. And, you know, switching gears and still trying to get the business of government done, you know, how has that been?
So I think the role of minority leader is, you know, I'm the voice of my caucus, right? And I help to set the priorities. I don't want to say I decide the priorities, because I feel like I'm a collective leader. I know I'm a collective leader. I have a conversation with my colleagues, and I figure out which direction we should move forward together. So that's my job. My job is to make sure that we get our priorities through. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But the other thing that my job is to build coalitions, right? There are some obstacles that we're not going to, you know, we're going to have an impasse on. But there are other things that we can build bridges over, and let's figure out how we can build bridges. You know, my experience as being a chief of staff and a clerk and what have you, I didn't always have a voice in the room.
Right.
Right. So being the minority leader gives me an opportunity to sort of hone back on those skills, whether it's to talk up or talk down or listen to what's going on and figure out where the path is. You know, when I was the chief of staff to Dwayne Gregory or the clerk of the legislature, my job was to create policy decisions and to work with exempt and union employees to figure out how to do that.
Right.
And so it's put me in positions where I'm able to know who's in different departments and how to get things done and also what questions to ask, and then figure out what questions we aren't asking to figure out a better way to get the solutions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that tends to be a majority of our discussions. You know, hey, here's something I see that's going on, and I just want to let you know I see it differently, you know? And speaking of seeing it a little differently, you know, I guess I want to add this distinction. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I point this out a few times on this show, but if a district elects a particular party to represent them, it's never 100% of the district that elects. You know, there are philosophies from both sides of the aisle represented in that vote. One person just got a little bit more from their side than the other person did. And those folks from the other side of the aisle, so to speak, they still need representation. And while the district, while the legislator from that particular district doesn't necessarily care, like, hey, I'm a Republican, the person who's calling me in my district is a Democrat, they probably didn't vote for me, they still take care of the issue. Making sure they have a voice in the room, you know, that's part of, I think, the responsibility of the minority caucus and you in that role as minority leader.
So one of the things that it doesn't matter what door I go to or who I'm speaking to, I don't ask you what your political persuasion is. My question to you is, what is your issue? What is important to you?
Right.
Whether it's, you know, managing the issues of your roadways with speeding, whether it has to do with, again, water quality or what have you. All of us have an issue. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican, conservative, you know, working families. We need to make sure that we're serving everyone. And we need to make sure that we're listening to other perspectives. Whether we agree with them or not, it's not the point. Once we close our ears to other sides, then what we're doing is we're creating barriers as opposed to bridges, which is not helpful in government.
Right. No, it's very true. It is. Speaking of interacting with people and saying, okay, what is your issue? I don't care about your political affiliation. What is your issue? In your time as, you know, serving on the legislature, what would you say is like, you know, maybe two things that were really important to you that you got behind and you really helped kind of move?
So, you know, I guess this question almost changes every day. Most recently, I said this is something we did in our first year. Is the Maternal Mortality Task Force. And constantly I've heard from, you know, families in our community who have had issues with pregnancy, whether, you know, they felt that their medical professional wasn't listening to them, whether they felt like they weren't getting the services they deemed to be provided, or they were underprescribed for medication.
Right.
And so we were able to help get, we actually got some new data this last week from the state And we hadn't gotten data from the state since 2018 on maternal mortality.
Wow.
So that's important. And yeah. why that's important to folks in Suffolk County is those of us who live on the west end of the county,
mm-hmm.
you probably live 20 minutes from a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If you live further east in the county, you might live further. Now, if you fall and hurt yourself, you're 20 minutes away from a hospital, you have a choice of where to go.
Right.
If you're in the east end, there's a storm, you know, it's a 911 issue, we might have to have a helicopter get to you. If you live on Fire Island, you might not be able to get to, you know, the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding the numbers, understanding how this has affected all people in our county, you know, extending birth outcomes is really important. I think the other thing that that we've worked on, and it's really been collective, you know, I could definitely say police reform, because that's one of those things that, mm-hmm. that's worked on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. But on a smaller scale, we were able to help someone keep their home. And we were able to help someone, I don't want to go too much into detail.
Yeah, of course.
But the idea is that there were some financial issues. We were able to help them map through it. We were able to get them their house back. And we were able to get them to a point where they can make the decision whether they wanted to sell their house or not.
Right.
And that, to me, is as important as, you know, anything globally that we've done.
Right.
Because that could create, that's a difference for someone. Someone where they're living, controlling their financial destiny.
Right.
Is really, really important.
So on some level, you know, we call constituent services, and that's all those individual calls and those individual issues. But there is some degree of, you know, this global work that has to be done, and that can be very rewarding. But when you help an individual and they directly had the contact with you and you're able to walk back to them and say, we got it done, there's great sense of pride in doing that.
And there's some, and I guess the worst part of the job is when you can't help somebody.
Right.
When there's something, there's a barrier,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes it's stuff with other levels of government. And sometimes it's just, you know, we're just behind the eight ball, whatever it is. You know, I remember when I was a chief of staff, we were able to, there was a gentleman from Copeg who he had paid his mortgage
mm-hmm.
every month. Probably the most studious person I've ever met.
Right.
Literally had a copy of every check
yep.
that he sent to the mortgage company. And everybody's thinking about, I don't think I've done that. Right. So, but in the meantime, his mortgage was sold to another company. And so those folks who know, if you pay your mortgage every day, so every month,
mm-hmm.
you usually roll your taxes into your mortgage.
Right.
When the mortgage was sold from one company to the other, one company didn't pay the taxes that one year.
Oh.
So the county took, because, you know, years later, mm-hmm. the county took possession of his house.
Mm-hmm.
He almost lost his house for less than $14,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he came in, he says, listen, I did this, 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 and this. Here's my, you know, 15 years rather.
Yeah.
Of paying taxes, you know, paying my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I literally have never seen anybody with every copy of every check. But this gentleman had it, yep. and we were able to not only help him get his house back,
mm-hmm.
we were able to help the state to look into the mortgage company for unscrupulous practices.
Right.
Because he wasn't the only one that happened to.
Yeah. And that's, you know, so that's sometimes something that happens as well. Someone comes along with a complaint and you realize it's not just this person, you know, and then that sometimes rolls its way into legislation.
Exactly.
That was very true. Well, listen, just talking about, you know, your role at the legislature, I can't ignore that coming up not too long from now, you guys are going to be presented with a budget from the administration. This is an outgoing administration. The last time Suffolk County had an outgoing administration, the budget that they presented only funded the government for about 6 months. It was a disastrous situation that had this whole snowball effect. It affected the workforce. It affected services available to...
I think there were almost 1,000 layoffs in that budget.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's not something we expect to see here. But it is another situation where, you know, leadership, you know, Steve Ballone and his team, they're term limited. They're going to go. And it's still their responsibility to hand you guys a budget that you have to vote on this year. And there's going to be competing philosophies, right? So right now there's two candidates for county executive. On the Democratic side, you've got Dave Colon. On the Republican side, you've got Ed Romaine. And they're going to have different approaches, but they're going to inherit a budget from Steve Ballone, and that's going to pass through you guys. And that's, you know, I think that's going to be a lot of work. And listen, on the other side of the aisle, there's some great folks there. We've had conversations with them already. And what they see on how they can get, you know, a workable budget passed. But I think it's, you know, I think it's the distinction. It's not a normal budget year. And so, you know, what do you see? What are you preparing for there?
So one of the things that I've heard, especially the last 2 years, is we need staffing. And I think while this is a budget year, I think more importantly, this is a contract year for many of the employees.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of conversations, and the legislature doesn't have a role in the negotiation process.
Right.
But I would love to see the ability for folks to have a better standard of living. However yeah. that is. And mm-hmm. I don't want to create court issues.
I for sure have an opinion on this, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut also.
Right. But I think that's the most important thing. I think it's the duty of the legislature to arm our departments, all of our departments,
mm-hmm.
with the staffing needed mm-hmm. to succeed.
Yeah.
Whether it's the health department or our, you know, information technology or our social services, Department of Labor, all of them have, you know, DPW, all of our departments are in search of staff.
Yes.
And we need to be able as a county, as our legislature, to arm whoever the next county executive is. You know, I have my preference.
Sure.
You know, I'd love mm-hmm. to see Dave take that role, and right. I'm working hard to make sure that happens. But I want to make sure whoever takes that seat has the appropriate staffing in the sure. department mm-hmm. to make sure that we can get things done. And that's something that we've heard at the legislature. You know, listen, we need more mm-hmm. 911 operators. We need more, you know, health sanitarians. Yeah. We need more sewage treatment operators. Yeah. We need more folks in our information technology department.
Yeah.
We need other skills. And also one of the things I'd love to see, and I don't know how I haven't mapped this out yet, is what ongoing trainings can we bring to help our staff?
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, discipline specific.
Right.
And how can we make sure that that's in our budget as well?
Yeah, listen, I, you know, wholeheartedly agree on staffing. I'm not aware of a department that doesn't have some staffing needs. And I am aware that nationally this is a problem for localities, right? States are having this issue. Counties, towns, villages, and we're not just in competition. When you say the public employee, these are people that work directly for the public. We're not just in competition with the private sector. Now we're in competition with each other, and people are going to a jurisdiction, getting their training, and then jumping ship to somebody that pays a little bit more or has better benefits. And when I say a little bit more, sometimes we're talking $15,000, $20,000 a year.
And I hear this from every union leader.
Yes.
In our county.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks, you know, we've had this conversation where folks will leave our county and go work for a school district. We have folks who leave, you know, some public safety unions and join another public safety union
mm-hmm.
or join another locality's public safety.
Yeah.
You know, we have folks who, you know, who are leaving county and then going to the state for different social services needs. You know, so I think, and I'm not, you know, advertising that. I don't want that to happen.
Right.
Because I think it's important that we maintain our talent here.
Sure.
And I also think we have to figure out how can we make sure that we can get what are those other localities doing better or right. organizations doing better or differently that we can sort of borrow and implement
and integrate.
Here.
Yeah. No, that's very true. The idea that this is happening to everybody, to me, speaks to a greater underlying issue, right? And the solve for that, I'm not aware of anybody who's quite solved it yet, but the idea from my perspective, I'm going to get a little bit on my soapbox and I don't want to get too crazy about it, but the idea that you can take a job in government, have a full-time job, and in taking that job, you have resigned yourself to also needing a second job to make ends meet. It's those people who can't make enough to keep the lights on and feed their kids. Those are essential jobs across all departments that are very hard to fill. And they're very hard to fill because someone knows I could take this job and have to work a second job just to keep the lights on. So no quality of life. Or I can take this other job. I can hold out for this other job and have just the one job and be able to. I don't think a taxpayer wants their public workforce to be stressed in that way. And this is not all jobs. I'm not suggesting that right. it's all jobs, but there's positions. Part of this whole process of trying to fix that problem, it's going to take a lot of conversations, folks like you and I sitting down with administrative people and maybe even some outside agencies and jurisdictions, and really putting our head together and really trying to figure it out. But another aspect of it is this budget that we're talking about. You know, if the funding isn't in the budget to try and solve these problems, to make sure that the staffing's where it needs to be, that the training is where it needs to be, and that the materials are where they need to be. I mean, if you have enough people but no pens, you're not going to get any letters written, right?
Exactly.
So all of these things matter. I've always kind of taken the position of revenue-generating departments, where hiring an employee, that employee will produce more revenue for the county than it costs to pay them. They should never be understaffed. And anywhere your overtime budget exceeds the cost of new hires, you're burning out good people that you're going to eventually lose when you can, in fact, afford to hire a full-time worker, right? So these are the things, you know, I'm not trying to put words in anybody's mouth, but as I look at the budget, these are the kind of analysis I'm doing.
And I would also say that in departments that are aided, right? Because
yes,
we have a number of positions that are aided through various, whether it's the state or the federal government. I think those are places where we know if you put $25 in, you know, we're really only spending 20.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. So right. I think that's an important function as well.
Yeah. But listen, some of those positions are 75 to 100% funded on the outside.
Right.
Why would you ever be understaffed there?
But the other part of that is, you know, they're understaffed there because maybe there's a calling, or, you know, there are other places that are paying more for a similar role.
Yep. Very true.
And also the other part that's really in part of this conversation is support staff.
Yeah.
Support staff is so important in every area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need somebody in the background who knows who's the administrator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, making sure we have the right support staff and the proper amount of support staff in our departments is key as well. And sometimes those departments that we're talking about, maybe those positions aren't aided. Maybe those positions don't generate funds.
Yep.
But we need the support staff.
Yeah. And listen, we talked about the loss of jobs in Suffolk County because of, you know, some financial hardship and bad budgeting going back over a decade. Middle management really took the biggest hit. And it would seem counterintuitive, but labor unions have always advocated for proper staffing levels for oversight as well. You know, if you have a bunch of guys on the road plowing, but no one to oversee the operation to make sure the right roads are being hit, that the issues are being addressed, that everybody's got the materials that they need, that they're getting their breaks so that they can continue to do their job, all of that stuff, then it doesn't work. It takes all of these functions working together like that battleship. Everybody's got to know their place. If you eliminate a floor on that battleship and there's no staff there, the whole ship doesn't.
And then you, yes, the ship can move, but you're not working at peak efficiency.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, again, I try not to get on my soapbox, and I always end up doing it. But I concur on these points. It's all very big and important stuff that's going to affect the working lives of the employees, but it's going to affect the day-to-day lives of all the taxpayers as well, the quality of services they get. But we should also talk about the 2023 election. Again, it's a big year. All legislative seats open, competitive races in a bunch of districts, and then we've got county executive races also. But why don't we start talking a little bit your district, and then, you know, maybe your side of the aisle, you know, what you're looking at.
So we have a great machine out there knocking on doors, talking to people. We have our candidates out there. I'm out there as well, going to events, having conversations. I think that's the biggest thing that we're doing. We're also doing our normal marketing, and we're adding our other things, social media, text messaging, and the like. But I think the best thing we could do, regardless of any side, is one person reaching out to another person and bringing them to the polls.
Yeah.
I think that's the best thing. And activating folks. And understanding what issues are at stake here. I think, you know, public safety, you know, public health, you know, those are things that are really, really important. Proper staffing, you know, fiscal management, those are things that are at stake here in this election. And, you know, understanding that whoever is elected, we want to make sure that those folks are keyed to work with everyone.
Right.
Not just keyed to work with, you know, whoever. I'm here to make sure that I'm working with everyone. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, we have to have a relationship. I have to have conversations with you.
Sure. No, I agree. And listen, you know, I mean, from my perspective, the Democratic Party had some solid control of the legislature, was able to achieve certain things because they had the votes to get things done. And that's flipped in recent years. And I would imagine there's some plan to bring in some more Democratic legislators. It's going to be a competitive year, but, you know, again, it's encouraging to see, for me at least, it's encouraging to see the amount of interest from the general voters. As we reach out, we do polling and we, you know, we check with folks, you know, which issues are important to them. Do they back things like these water quality measures that we've been supporting that I know you are very much plugged in.
And your employees have been working on this for the better part of almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. You know, some of these ideas came from AME employees saying this is what we need to do. This is the direction we need to go in.
Right.
And advocating on to our state and federal electors. I think I would add to that is, you know, the folks who are running on our side.
Yeah.
I will say I love the energy I see. Mm-hmm. You know, I have folks who are doing homework and asking questions, paying attention to the meetings, going to the meetings, being engaged in the process. We had a great retreat a couple of months ago where we talked about, you know, the fundamentals of, you know, electoral process, mm-hmm. but also what the county does and what we do well, how we need to do better. And I think that has helped, you know, galvanize some of those issues on our side.
Sure.
You know, the fact that these folks now understand a majority of what we're doing and what's important to not only our AME employees, but all of our employees here in the county, mm-hmm. yeah. and our county residents.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And, you know, it's easy, you know, I guess we all, in a way, we kind of live in our bubble, right? Your day-to-day life brings certain issues, certain topics, certain personalities to you constantly. And that isn't necessarily indicative of everybody in your district or Suffolk County as a whole. So getting out, seeing people, listening, as you said, I think this is, you know, one of the most astute things an elected official can do. Ask questions, listen. Take that information in and process it. These issues, you know, I've talked a few times. Some of these issues are a lot more complex than they sound. They don't really summarize well in a sentence or a quick article in the newspaper.
Or a soundbite, yes.
Right, right.
There's more and everything is, you know, a lot of times we think things are black and white. Not mm-hmm. everything is black and white. Some things have a nuance to it, and some things, you know, we have to have some push and give, I guess you could say.
Right, right. And there's the weighing of, you know, what does the most good or what does the least harm when we're looking at pieces of legislation. And I've certainly been in the role of coming by where everybody's, you know, maybe excited about a piece of legislation. I say, hey, you know, I do want to raise this one point that I don't right. think anybody's looking at. You know, to your credit and, you know, again, to the majority of the legislature, to their credit, they always find the time to listen to these issues and weigh it. We don't always get what we were asking for, but they always find the time to listen to us, understand, okay, I see why that's important. And that gets added to the scales to figure out, can we do or should we do this? Do we need to amend something that we're looking at? So it is a lot. You know, I'm trying to make it a little easier for our listeners to get a sense of what the process is. And the simplest way I can say is it's not that simple.
It's like when you get those directions to build a TV table. It says, oh, you need these screws and this, mm-hmm. you know, wrench and this screwdriver and this and this and this. It doesn't tell you, well, can you lift this much? Can you hold this plate?
Right.
Do you have someone there who can keep this held yeah. up while you screw this in? That's not in the direction. It's those things that are innate in the
yeah,
process
yeah. Mm-hmm.
that are important. And I think those are things that we all have to convey to people. A lot of times we all say, well, I could do this and I could do that and I could do the third. But the other thing is, you know, I have to be able to count to 10.
Yeah.
One. And two, I have to be able to communicate my idea or my vision to others for them to buy in. And that's right. not always easy.
Right.
It's just following the direction.
And a lot of times, you know, again, it's a very simplified way of saying it. I'm going to add some complexity back again. Sometimes in trying to achieve the goal of what the legislature does, they put rules in place. And then those rules get offloaded to a bunch of other people to actually implement. And so while the legislature's vision was clear, if it's not communicated back, the instructions aren't communicated back, the whole thing can go awry. And this, you know, I mean, we can
right.
probably
and sometimes,
talk for an hour
you know,
about
the attorneys say, well, yeah, it's simple, but it's not that simple.
Right.
Or sometimes we're superseded by other levels of government.
For sure. Minority Leader Jason Richburg, our guest this morning. And again, I appreciate you carving out time. There's so much going on. And to find the time to come in and speak with us and you know, inform the public of what's going on and what your universe kind of looks like. I really appreciate you taking the time for
me. Well, anytime. And you know, I'd love to come back and we can have a further conversation maybe after the election.
Absolutely.
Or before, and talk about where we are and what's important and what issues you guys are hearing out in the public. Because I think it's really, really important to have that feedback.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next time.